welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. Happy fall.
Happy fall to you, too. Hopefully things are going okay for you in California.
Yeah, you know, it's dry, and I hope by the time this gets broadcast to listeners, we will have had some rain. We're usually, by this point, we've had rain a couple of times in the fall. We haven't had a drop, so we're all sort of doing rain dances and hoping that both for the fires, but for future fires, that we get some moisture.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck.
Yeah. Anyways, those firefighters, lots of injuries and lots of stuff going on. I'm sure that at least some of them will appreciate this poem this week. This is a poem that you've chosen on back pain. As listeners will know, not only do listeners have a high chance of having had back pain at some point in their life, but the vast majority of our patients also will have back pain, and most of them will see us in primary care. And the type of back pain they have will be called non-specific lower back pain, which means that the back pain doesn't really have a specific underlying condition that's identified. It's usually a strain or pull or an odd position or whatever. Most of this is self-limited and will take care of itself. Patients who continue to have back pain beyond sort of specified periods of time fall into what we call subacute back pain, which is usually 4 to 12 weeks. And beyond 12 weeks, we typically call it chronic back pain. And our goal is to get people out of pain. There's no data suggesting that any of the non-pharmacologic treatments are any better than any of the other ones, but there are a number of things that people can try, like massage and acupuncture and spinal manipulation and the like. It is important to remind everybody that there is no role for bed rest for patients with acute lower back pain. Data suggests quite strongly that people who are treated with bed rest will have more pain and recover more slowly than people that are moderately ambulatory. Again, we're not suggesting they go and run a marathon. There are some patients either who will prefer pharmacotherapy or will have failed non-pharmacotherapy, and we try to look to treat them with medications, and our first go-to drug is obviously one of the non-steroidals. I personally find no use for muscle relaxants. I try to stay away from them like the plague in my practice. But when NSAIDs are no longer working, what about the GABAs? By that, I mean gabapentin and pregabalin. So you found a poem. It was published in the CMAJ, the Canadian Medical Association Journal. It's an electronic page, so I'm not going to give it to listeners, but you can find it on the website. The question that the poem asks is, are anticonvulsants an effective treatment for lower back pain? Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, as with muscle relaxants, you know, we seem to have more studies that show what doesn't work than what does work for low back pain, unfortunately. And you're right, the muscle relaxants, there was a randomized trial of patients with acute low back pain, and those that got the Flexeril instead of a placebo didn't do any better. This study is a meta-analysis looking at anticonvulsants. We've been trying to reduce our use of opiates for pain, so we're increasingly reaching to anticonvulsants, gabapentin. A lot of my patients that I see are on these medications for painful conditions. We know that there's some pretty good evidence that they may not be terrifically well tolerated, but they do have some beneficial effects for peripheral neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy, but more and more folks are using them for low back pain. So this was a systematic review that found 9 RCTs comparing topiramate, pregabalin, or gabapentin with placebo in patients with low back pain with or without radiculopathy. They were pretty good studies. All but one of them was at a low risk of bias. The study used different pain scales, so they used what's called a standardized mean difference in pain scores as the main outcome. Doing that basically puts pain scores that have different ranges like 0 to 10 or 0 to 30 on the same scale. The 9 studies reported 14 comparisons. Only 2 of the 14 comparisons showed a statistically significant benefit. One was a small study using high-dose gabapentin, 3,600 milligrams a day, which at least in my experience, isn't very well tolerated at all in about 40 patients with lumbar radicular pain. That was a crossover study. And so with crossover studies, patients are their own control. And with a drug that has as many side effects as gabapentin, I'm pretty sure it has the effect of unblinding the patients. They know when they were taking the active drug, which, given a subjective outcome, you know, it makes the placebo effect more likely. So the other study was a study of 96 patients with low back pain given 300 of topiramate daily. The other topiramate study, though, found no benefit, and none of the studies of pregabalin or the other studies of gabapentin found any benefit. Where they could pool the results, they didn't find any significant difference between groups. On the other hand, there was no difference in serious adverse events, but that was only based on two studies that reported adverse events in about 400 patients. Overall adverse events that led to stopping the medication were more common with the active treatment. Relative risk was about 1.4 for that. So bottom line is, using these anticonvulsants like gabapentin, pregabalin, topiramate for painful conditions has been increasing. I think this review finds pretty good evidence that they are not very effective for patients with acute low back pain. There is some increased risk for, you know, mild or moderate adverse events. There's also increasing reports that it's being abused and diverted and sometimes actually mixed with heroin. So I did not know that till I started looking into this, but it is increasingly of concern in terms of diversion. So that's something I think our listeners should be aware of.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that either. Perhaps speaking on behalf of our listeners, this is one of the most frustrating positions in medicine, where, you know, your patient has pain, you believe that they have pain. It's not a question of not believing our patients. You want to avoid, like the plague, any of the narcotics for all the reasons our listeners know. The NSAIDs aren't working, and so we're hungry for another group. And, you know, lots of us were hoping that, you know, these anticonvulsants would offer some benefit. And I guess this is pretty convincing that, at least for this particular condition, it's not going to be much help.
Well, we need a good placebo. That's what I keep saying. We need a good convincing placebo that's safe and that won't hurt our patients, and that that they are convinced will help them.
Yeah.
If anyone can come up with that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. At the risk of sounding cynical, I think that these anticonvulsants played that role for me.
300 of gabapentin twice a day, very safe, yeah. Minimal side effects, and who knows, maybe a good placebo.
Exactly. Talk with you again next week, Mark. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.